Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. If you're a small business owner and you love this podcast, then you definitely want to check out our Entree Leadership Master Series event. Dave Ramsey personally teaches this event here at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, so you can meet with our team and see behind the scenes of how Dave runs his business. Registration is open for the next event the first week of November. Check out EntreeLeadership.com to get your seat locked in today.
Welcome to the Dave Ramsey Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. My name is Chris Hogan, and I'm excited to host another great episode for you today. On today's show, we have a lesson from Dave talking about communication, the importance of communication, and how do you go about this as a leader with your team. We also have author and radio show host Ken Coleman, who's going to join us to talk about his book, One Question. On the last episode, we recapped our Spring Entree Leadership Master Series event, and then we interviewed real business owners who are down in the trenches implementing Entree Leadership. Today's podcast lesson from Dave is about communication. Communication, even if there's conflict involved, is the lifeblood of an organization. Here is Dave Ramsey's lesson on communication.
A winning culture of communication says, when in doubt, ask. When we have you in the interview process, we tell you, we tell your spouse that our door is open and you don't need to go around wondering what the flip's going on. If you're wondering, there's a problem. Come ask. No one gets killed for asking. And like I tell the guys, even around that rap with Dave, the new guys, I say, if you've heard a rumor, a negative thing about us, you know, yes, I filed bankruptcy once. The rumor's going around that I filed 15 times. That every time I get in trouble, I file again. There's all these negative rumors. People make up stuff about us all the time. I've done plenty of dumb things. I'll tell you all of them. And if you ask me something that's totally uncomfortable or that's, you know, like what my personal income is or something, I'm going to tell you the truth. It's none of your business. That's what I'm, but you can always ask if you want to know. You can ask if you heard this or that. It's a good thing. The communication doors are always open. This culture of communication shines the light on problems and how the problems are handled. This light shining is done in such a way that individuals aren't harmed or embarrassed. You do not embarrass people in meetings in front of people. That's not, we're not calling people out in a public setting. Don't do that. When negative things are covered up, all the team gets is hype. There's this feeling of sanctioned sin or incompetence. They can smell secrets a mile away. The greatest problem in communication is the illusion that it has actually been accomplished. You've got to be intentional about this subject.
Remember now, with communication, it's the lifeblood of the organization. It's imperative for it to be able to happen clearly and for your team to know what's happening. Here's the deal. If your team knows that things are being addressed, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, they feel confident. They know that things are being addressed. They feel better. And if they can feel better, here's the deal. They can focus on what they have to do to help your organization or your business run. So it allows them to stay focused. So you want them to see communication happening. You want to be open and honest with them as you're talking about things that maybe aren't so good, but also the things that are great. Take the time to talk with them head on. Treat them like an adult. If you treat them like an adult, they're going to be more apt to act like an adult. Dave takes the time to address things with us all the time. He hits it head on. He helps us be aware of what exactly is going on and what the plan is to deal with it. He'll sit us down and he'll talk to us. He'll let us know that, hey, here's what's going on or here's this issue that we're addressing. And we know that, hey, Dave and the leadership team are taking the steps to address whatever it is. We have confidence in his ability. And he also trusts us enough to be open and honest with us to let us know exactly what's going on. We're not being kept in the dark. And as a leader, one of the things you want to do is to have confidence with your team. Don't keep them in the dark. Talk to them, not at them. And let them know when things are hard. Let them know your expectations, what it is that they have to do to make sure that the company or the organization is moving forward. That's imperative. That's what you want to do as a leader. Don't hide from it. Hit it head on. Let them know that you have a plan and that you're working on it. But you also have to keep them up to date. Give them tips. Give them information so they feel like that they're inside the loop. If they're in the loop, they're going to trust you as a leader. And that's the one thing that you can't put a price on. Trust as a leader. It's imperative. Today we have author, speaker, and talk radio show host Ken Coleman joining us on the podcast. His book, One Question, invites you to kind of peer over the shoulder of a master interviewer, someone that has access to today's best and brightest as he delivers these carefully crafted questions and collects answers guaranteed to surprise, challenge, and inspire. It includes interviews with all the people you'll recognize. These are all people we've had on the podcast. Coach Tony Dungy, John Maxwell, Jim Collins, Patrick Lencioni, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Welcome to the show, Ken Coleman. Ken, how are you today?
Chris, I'm great. I'm so thrilled to be with you and your listeners.
Ken, tell us a little bit about your new book, why you wrote it, and what drove you. What's the story behind it?
Yeah, Chris, I wanted to highlight two things out of this book. One, I wanted to illustrate the power of a great question. I think in life, we come into this world very curious as toddlers. Any parent listening in knows that. And in doing research for this book, Chris, I found some research from the University of Michigan that says, that found that by the time we reach the eighth grade, the average person in our world at the eighth grade level has now only asking about 2 to 3 questions a day. And that was very sad to me. And what happens is we kind of lower that antenna that we're kind of born with of curiosity, and we begin to accept the status quo. And what's happening in our Western education system is also fostering this, and that is that we teach kids how to answer questions. We were trying to prepare them how to test well and how to answer things as opposed to how to ask questions. And, Chris, you know this so well. Dave Ramsey knows this so well. But entrepreneurs, by nature, are inquisitive people.
Mm-hmm.
They fix problems, right?
That's right.
They say, well, there's a need here, and I'm going to fix it. And the way they fix that is by saying, hey, what could be? What should be? And so I wanted to highlight the power of questions throughout our lives, and not just as little kids as we begin to learn the basics of life. But I know that great entrepreneurs and great leaders are all people who are continually learning, and at the source of that is curiosity. So that was the first thing I wanted to do, was to highlight what a good question can do and what a great question can do. In the book, I say good questions inform, but great questions transform. And the idea there is that when you ask a great question that unlocks life's big answers, then you change the way you think and believe. And when you change the way you think and believe, then you can change the way you act, and that goes for others as well. So that was the first goal. And the second goal was, I'm just a curious guy, and I love to interview. In my line of work, I get to interview some great people, and I love learning how they tick and why they tick and how they've been successful and why they've been successful. And so what I wanted to do was give some content in short form. Each chapter is only 4 pages long, as you know, Chris. And the idea was, just in one question, can we get great information, nuggets of wisdom that are timeless? And we've done that in this book, and I'm so proud to talk about it because it's not my wisdom. But I've sat down with 34 of, I think, the brightest minds in our world, folks like Malcolm Gladwell and Seth Godin and Jim Collins and Tony Robbins and John Maxwell and Daniel Pink, and the list goes on and on and on. But the idea here was is to give, I like to call it a Snickers bar. Each chapter will satisfy you and quickly, and we're talking about some of the biggest stuff in life, and we divide the book into 3 sections: succeeding, surviving, and sustaining. And I did that on purpose. The goal was to give some great wisdom through what I believe are key seasons of life that we all go through. And many times, you know this well, Chris, we straddle all 3 of those.
Yes.
And that's what we've done here. And so that's what we wanted to highlight: the power of a question and how we can use it throughout our lives for growth. And then secondly, I just wanted to hand out some terrific wisdom because of the people I get to sit with.
Well, I've definitely enjoyed reading it. We're talking to Ken Coleman, the author of One Question, Life-Changing Answers from Today's Leading Voices. And Ken, you know the Entree Leadership Podcast is designed for leaders. And so I think, you know, how can, as a leader, how important is it for us to learn how to ask more questions when we're communicating with our teams?
I think it's enormous. I will tell you that I believe that asking the right questions as a leader is the lifeblood for longevity. And what I mean by that is leaders get stuck. Leaders get wrapped up in the status quo when they stop asking questions. Let's look at specifically what I'm talking about. Number one, when they stop asking themselves questions. You know, Andy Stanley, he illustrates in one of the points he gives in the book when I ask him about the power of the now and staying in the moment. And he says that I always ask this big question when I get opportunities or people ask me to do things. Why am I doing what I'm doing? And that's just one illustration that brings this point home. Leaders, you have got to ask yourselves the piercing, penetrating questions. In fact, Dave Ramsey's organization does this as well as anybody I know. And you know this well, Chris, that you guys are always saying, if we're going to do this, does it meet our core values? Does it meet our clear vision and strategy? And so those are the questions. You've got to get what I call pillar-type questions. These are the foundational questions of your personal mission, your professional mission, your company's mission. And you've got to be able to ask yourself those honest questions on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And the second area is you've got to be able to ask your core team, the people that you lead directly, the people that are closest to you, because you have got to make sure that you've got some accountability. So these are the accountability type questions. Hey, am I leading well? Are we staying on purpose? You know, be honest with me. You've got to have that in your life, and it doesn't have to be just people inside the organization, but people outside. And then you've got to be able to make sure that you're getting great feedback from everyone in the organization. And so if you can't come in contact with everybody, then make sure your direct reports and their direct reports, and you create a culture of curiosity, and not just for the sake of, hey, what's going on, but I mean literally, hey, what are we hearing from our customers? What's working? Why is it not working? Where's the new area that you think we got to go into? And I think if we as leaders aren't threatened by the people we lead and their ideas and their suggestions, then you create this habit of inquiry, which is a concept I introduced on a personal level in the last chapter of the book. But I think if leaders, Chris, grasp this idea of a habit of inquiry and creating a culture where we're always asking, what if, what's next, why not? And it's okay to ask all those questions as long as you have clear vision and clear riverbanks, yeah, so that the answers are always juxtaposed to, is it on mission? Is it on purpose?
Yeah. Ken, does it take courage to ask yourself some hard questions?
Yeah, it does. You know why? Because you're going to get some tough answers to those hard questions. You know, that's the very nature of a tough question. You know, hey, am I the right leader for this organization right now? Wow, that's a tough question.
Yes,
that's a very tough question. Could have a really hard answer coming back at you. But here's what I have found in my own personal life. When I ask the tough questions of people that I'm accountable to, whether it be in my personal integrity or just mentors that are guiding me in my personal growth, I find that sometimes the tough love and the honest feedback that I get, it doesn't make me feel good right away. But I got to tell you, after the personal sting wears off, I am so much stronger, and I'm so much better for it, and I've got great clarity. And I would take clarity over comfort every day of the week. And what I mean by that is this, and you're seeing this with parents. Let me give you an example, Chris, of how parents are doing this, and leaders may make this mistake. I believe in today's culture, we as parents are so concerned about making our kids feel good instead of teaching our kids how to be good. And that's just a natural reaction for all of us.
If
the leader doesn't like confrontation, well,
that's
all
right.
We want our people to feel good. Well, no, I really don't want them to feel good. I want them to be good. And if they're being good, right, and they're doing good, well, then the feeling is going to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that out of whack sometimes because it's not fun to ever pass on information that stings a little bit. And so that's the same thing that happens when we have the courage to ask tough questions about ourselves, about our performance, about our leadership, but it pays off in the end if you're willing to take it and let the sting wear off and go, man, I'm so much better for it. So the idea here is leaders, asking questions about yourself and your own growth and your own measurements and your own performance will give you great clarity. And I'd much rather have clarity over comfort.
I like that. Now, what are some, as a leader, what are some potential costs if you don't ask good questions to your team?
Well, you know, that's a wonderful question. One of the costs that jumps right off the bat is if you're not asking questions, you're going to get blindsided. At some point, if you've got your head in the sand long enough, you're going to get completely just bushwhacked. I mean, upside the head and have no idea what happened. Now, that could play out, as our audience knows, they're intelligent people. That could play out in several different ways. You know, you could have a leadership coup. You know, that could happen. You could be undermined within your own organization. You could blow it big time, miss a huge opportunity, see profits fall flat and not see a curve coming. You're not innovating. You're not staying fresh. You're not growing personally. I mean, These are multiple areas where if you're not asking questions as a leader, you're going to absolutely get passed up. You know, I mean, there's just no question in my mind. You're going to be running along on a marathon like a lot of people do, and a 75-year-old woman blows by you, and you're going, what just happened here?
Yeah.
And I think blind spots are going to pop up everywhere if you're not continually asking questions in multiple areas of your life.
Wow. I had a gentleman that sent me a question on Twitter yesterday, and he said, Chris, what do I do with an employee that's a good teammate, but they act like they're a know-it-all? And I told him, I said, I think you should sit down and have a heart-to-heart meeting with them, very open and honest. But I'm curious, Ken, with you being a master interviewer and studying the art of asking questions, what are some questions we could ask that know-it-all employee to understand what's inside their mind, what's driving their behavior?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, off the top of my head, the first thing I would sit down is if this is the case, so we've identified this guy as a good teammate, so really... As a good teammate, it appears that he's getting along with other people, and he is contributing and pulling his load, so that's a win. But there is a distinct factor in his personality where he kind of is very confident, and he knows a lot. Generally know-it-alls generally do know a lot, and it's combined with a confidence factor that they're going to share it and share their opinion generously, even in times where it's not wanted. And so what you've got there is an interesting dichotomy. Guy that's a good teammate, carries his weight, but he irritates people with the know-it-all stuff. And so I think what you do there is you sit down one-on-one and go, hey, can I just encourage you? Hey, listen, man, you're doing a great job. You're a vital part of the team. Here's where you're valuable. You're doing some great things. But here's an area of your personality that I think's a little raw, a little rough, and I'm going to suggest we smooth it out, but I want to ask you, are you aware of this? Why do you think you come across this way? Why do you think people are saying this? And see, what happens there is you're taking an uncomfortable leadership management situation, and by asking fair questions and non-indicting questions, you're not saying this is how you are. You're saying, here's what I'm hearing, but I think you're such a valuable part of the organization. I don't want to jump to, so, hey, I know that you care about your growth. So why do you think people are saying this? Why do you think you maybe do this and come across this way? How do you think you maybe can smooth that out, but don't quench your spirit? See, just in the way you ask a question like that, and then you give the responsibility to the person as opposed to criticizing or coming across as though, hey, here's what you're doing wrong, you're really putting them in a position to say, hey, here's what the perception is, and this is a reality because of that perception. So how do you think you can manage this better? Because, boy, we sure do value you. But I think this is an area where you can grow and win. And I think that kind of thought, and here's the point, Chris, and that's why I wrote the book. I think people sometimes struggle with basic communication because they just don't stop and think. If you could just shut your door for 2 minutes before a meeting like that and go, okay, how can I ask questions as opposed to make accusations or present indictments? And boy, that really changes the entire posture of you, the manager who's doing the confrontation, and it also changes the entire mood and culture of this one-on-one meeting. And I think mature people will really notice the difference there and handle that really well.
Well, and in your book, you have a line in here that I underlined, and I thought, wow. You say in here that a great question is a surgeon's scalpel that can cut deep below the surface to tap into the issues behind the issues.
Yeah.
And that's huge.
Yeah.
Because every leader, I mean, if you've got people around, you have a potential for a problem. Mm. Right. And so trying to gain understanding. But that metaphor of the surgeon's scalpel cutting deeper to really be able to understand someone's heart and their motive, it'll allow for better connection, won't it?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you where I was inspired with that line. A few years ago, I went and got some counseling over some anger issues that I had. And, you know, I don't know how many people have actually got counseling that have listened in here, but, you know, counseling has the stigma about it, Chris. You know what I mean?
Yes, it
you
does.
You walk into something like that, you want to wear a sign on your chest that says, hey, I'm not a freak.
That's right.
I'm just in here for this, right? And that's just how we are as humans. But I got to tell you, it was a huge breakthrough for me. And getting healthy is so huge. And I had some anger issues over some unresolved things that I hadn't forgiven some people on, and it was boiling up. And so, and when I went through those counseling sessions, I really, as a guy who asks questions for a living and has driven by the science of it, and I love it. That's what a counselor does, and that's what a great leader does, and that's what a great parent does. And the idea here is that if you can really get your antenna up, get your ears up, get your eyes open, and really listen with your whole body, then you're going to be able to ask the question that cuts through. And this is huge for leaders in times of turbulence, mm-hmm. in times of turmoil. A great question can really steady the ship, because people get distraught and they're sitting there going, you know, hey, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And those are the silly, worthless questions. But a leader sometimes in dealing with a person or a team or a problem, they take the complex and they simplify it so that it connects with followers' heads and hearts. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that most of the time is a question. It may end up being a decision you make, but at the core of it, it's asking a question. So that surgeon scalpel, I mean, we see this with parents. You know, you may have a problem with one of your kids, or you're just not getting through to them or something, and they're kind of giving you all these roundabout answers, or maybe they're being dishonest with you, and then you ask the right question that gets right to it, and it hits that raw nerve, and boom, the kid crumbles, and you get truth.
Mm-hmm.
You find out what's really bothering them. And that's the same thing in business. And I think, again, Chris, it just takes the discipline to listen with your whole body. And let me just illustrate that real quick.
Yeah, if you would, please.
How I do interviews. Listening to your whole body is this. I can listen to Chris Hogan's statements with my ears. I'm going to hear you. But if I'm sitting with you, Chris, I want to watch your body reaction. Okay? Mm-hmm. I want to see how you shift, how you react to certain things that you say or that I ask you. And I don't want to just hear you. I want to listen with my whole body, which means I'm watching your whole body. You know what I mean? It's not just what you say. It is how you react, how you shift, what is your facial expression. And I think if we as leaders get our antenna up and truly listen holistically, not just the words people say, but what are they, how are they acting? What are they saying to other people? There's a holistic way to listen to people. And when we observe all that, it allows us to then step back, measure everything two or three times, and then ask those surgeon-like questions that just pierce through all of the surface junk and get to the heart of the matter. And that's what a great question does.
Wow. Now, also in there, because I think the listening side is important for leaders, because, I mean, you can ask a great question, but if you're not listening to the response, you're going to miss the boat.
That's right.
Now, you also say in here that as people are thinking about and trying to, as leaders, ask great questions, you talk about the three things that a great question can do. You say that it can reveal, it moves, and it changes, which I thought was a very profound statement. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners?
Yeah, you know, as I say in the book, questions are the keys to unlocking life's biggest answers, most important answers. And so using questions as keys like that, what happens is when you ask a great question and it really reveals something you need to know, and that's the thing, I mean, this sounds so simplistic, but it's so profound, is that you got to ask what you need to know. What do you really need to know? Don't ask a question that you think everybody wants you to ask. What do you really need to know? And get right to it and use it like a weapon, a key that unlocks what you need to know. And so what happens is a great question reveals what we need to know. And when we find out what we really need to know, then we're able to filter that, apply it, and then it changes our belief. And so here's the key. I don't care what area of life you're looking at. Leaders know this if they're really honest with themselves. You can't change the way somebody acts if you don't change the way they believe.
Mm.
It never works. Mm. It never works. You can teach and train and just go nuts trying to change the way somebody acts. But if you don't change the reason for their belief system as to why they should act this way, if you don't get to the core, okay, I now believe that I should act this way, right? So change the way we think is the key to change the way we act. It will never change. You can see this in political movements. You can see this in business. You can see this with your own children. And so that's the key here, is to use questions in a way to help people discover what they need to discover. And if you're casting vision, I think questions are the key to casting vision. Andy Stanley, who wrote the book Visioneering, obviously pastor of a large mega church here in the Atlanta area, taught a series one time at a leadership conference that I heard. He used the biblical story of Nehemiah, the idea of how do you cast vision. And the biblical story, even for our business audience here, is that he rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. And how did he do it? How did he cast the vision and get people behind him to do it? He asked questions himself so that he could then explain it. And the first thing is why are we rebuilding the walls? And then, so what's the reason? What's the solution? And then what's the result? And so, hey, the walls are torn down. We need to rebuild the walls. Okay, well, that's what we're going to do. That's why we need to do it, because it's torn down. We need to rebuild it. Well, what's the reason for this? Well, to rebuild and protect the city and glorify God, and that's the whole biblical story there. So the idea is that asking the question, so why are we doing what we're doing? Okay, well, why do we need to do this? Okay, then what's it look like? How do we rebuild it? What is what we are doing? Hmm. And finally, what's going to happen as a result of doing this? And that's a simple three-step process for casting vision. People have got to get that, you know. What's the reason we need to do this? Okay, how do we do it? And then what's going to result in doing this? And it's so simple. But again, at the heart of casting vision is great questions.
And you have to keep repeating it, don't you? I mean, you can't just do it one time and think you're done.
No, in fact, every time you cast a new vision, you repeat the process, you know. And it's a continual thing. Again, in parenting, same deal. When you're helping teach your kids and casting a vision for their life and why you've got a parenting decision here or why we're going to do this, same thing with your management team and the people that are just the straight-out followers. They will follow you. They will follow you if they know clearly why we're doing it and what the end result is. Now, not everybody will. Okay, not everybody's going to buy into the vision, but those who buy into it, they'll buy into it, but they got to know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to see the long term. And what happens a lot of times, Chris, is leaders just say, okay, here's what we're doing.
Hmm.
And they don't even tell us the how, and they don't even tell us the why.
Hmm.
That's a screwed up formula. And so what happens is you get a leader way out in front, and you've got a straggled, you know, kind of fragmented line of people in the organization trying to catch up or trying to follow. And some people just flat out going, I'm not following this. And that's messed up, you know, and that's where most leaders fail. You've got to have all three. This is what, and this is why, and this is how. And you got to be able to answer those questions.
Well, and I think that that's imperative for our listeners to hear, is understanding that the why and the how, the repeating that. It can feel mundane because we have the vision inside of us, but we have to let it out so people can be aware.
That's right.
Ken, you are definitely a person that has enjoyed and you are intrigued by communication and getting to know people. What drives you to understand and want to understand people better?
Well, I think couple things. And I think, you know, some of us are just born a little bit more curious than others. However, I believe we're all born with an innate curiosity that we have to kind of treat like a campfire.
Hmm.
We got to keep throwing wood on it, and we got to keep the flames going. And the way we do that is by actually learning about as many people and things as possible. And I think there's something to that. You know, Charles Tremendous Jones said, you know, you are who you are, who you will be in 10 years by the people you meet and the books you read. And I think that that's absolutely right. And
yes,
that's something I've taken to a very extreme level, in that I love interviewing people that are successful. And, you know, the reason is because I'm always learning and growing when I sit down with people who may be different from me. And I think we get different perspectives. I used a quote on my radio show the other day, Chris, that's so great. And I'm going to have to paraphrase it because I don't have it in front of me. But the actor, Alan Alda, said, you know what he said? He said, our assumptions are basically like windows to our lives. And every once in a while, we need to scrub those windows so that we can let the light in. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said.
Yeah.
And that's a powerful statement about assumptions, right?
Yes,
and
it is.
And so my assumptions will never change, meaning the windows of my life will be dirty and crusty and no light will be able to come in, which would be truth, right? Mm. Or new information, however you want to use that metaphor. And so, you know, my assumptions change a lot when I sit down with people who maybe believe different than me, maybe have a different, completely different walk of life, but I begin to understand and I can still learn from them. And even if I learn nothing from them, if I understand them, wow. Now that's huge, because now I may not agree with them on some things, but I certainly understand where they come from. And see, this helps us big time when we talk about the messy issues of life. I know this is a business leader podcast, but this is huge. This is huge, because in our political discussion now, it's as vitriolic and as acidic as it ever has been. And one of the reasons is because I don't think that there is a posture of, hey, I just want to sit down, and instead of debating somebody, I just want to ask them a bunch of questions. And instead of trying to convince them of my point of view, what if I just ask them everything under the sun about why they are who they are, why they believe what they believe? I'm going to walk away with terrific understanding. And that has happened in my life. And I got to tell you, it is the way to go. Because I think what happens is you can begin to have common ground and work with people that you don't agree with on everything.
You meant that phrase, common ground. And I think for leaders, I think it's so important for them to really understand that everybody's got to have this basis, this common ground that we're standing on if we're working together to be able to achieve success. And I love that. One of the lines in your book, you talk about the importance of probing versus proving. And I love that because it draws us back to asking better questions. Stop trying to prove your point. First, gain understanding, right?
That's exactly right. Let me just use an example. You know, the whole Chick-fil-A controversy that happened last year,
yes,
last summer, almost a year to the day we're doing this, happened in part on my radio show, and Dan Cathy came on my show. I asked him about the fatherless crisis, and then he made some comments about gay marriage. Well, then it kind of went nuts, and my show got pulled into it, and it wasn't a discussion that I care to have or something I'm trying to be a crusader on, but I got pulled into it, and I went on CNN, and as a result of that, I got invited by a very prominent gay activist to come spend a day with him because he liked what I said on CNN, even though he disagreed with a lot of it and wanted me to kind of judge Dan Cathy. Here's the point in bringing that up. To your point, this phrase in the book, this idea of probing versus proving. Well, what I found out in spending a day with this prominent gay activist is that I'm not going to change his mind, and he was trying to change my mind.
Mm.
But I was in his house, so I'm just listening to him, and he's hours and hours on end trying to make a case. And, you know, I just said to him at some point, I said, look, I don't know that either side of this issue, let's just say evangelicals and the gay community, I don't know that they're going to change each other's mind, but is that really the point? Because if you're not going to change each other's mind, then how do we live in civility? I mean, how do we live in the same sandbox, which is this amazing country that is already as diverse as you could possibly imagine and kind of founded on its melting pot diversity? And what I learned from that, I really translated that into the book. And so we spent the whole day together having civil conversation and asking each other a lot of questions. And it goes back to my last answer. When you probe, you learn. And it doesn't mean that you're going to change your positions. And a lot of people, Chris, I'm convinced, and this is huge back to business leaders, a lot of business leaders, I believe, Chris, are secretly worried that if they ask a lot of questions of somebody that they may not agree with or maybe they have a competition with or something, that they're going to somehow change their principles.
Mm.
And I don't think that's the case. In fact, I would say to you that in probing with someone that you may disagree with philosophically, your principles only become that much stronger because you can juxtapose those against what you believe and why you believe. But what happens is great understanding. And again, understanding leads to civil conversations, and civil conversations can then turn into productive conversations. And that is huge. That's a huge business principle there. Like, for instance, I love the story of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, how they were competitors. And let's just be honest today. A lot of competition out there in business, and sometimes it gets ugly. Well, how can you probe as opposed to prove? Meaning, instead of trying to necessarily defeat or win an argument with a competitor, find out why they do what they do, why they act the way they act. You get a little understanding out of it. You may not be best friends, but I think in the end you're going to walk away a much more equipped leader and I think a better person. I just believe in this probing versus proving, and you don't have to leave your principles at the door when you do that.
That's good. And I think it'll be important for our leaders and business owners out there, especially as they're networking with other like-minded or maybe not like-minded businesses out there. But for the sake of the company, they're going to have to be able to understand their competition as well as how to collaborate with people on different projects.
That's exactly right.
Now, you've interviewed some incredibly powerful people in your book, One Question, Life-Changing Answers from Today's Leading Voices. And you've talked to thought leaders, business owners, all of these high-end, powerful people. I'm curious, Ken, if you've noticed or seen over the years some common character traits that you are seeing from these highly successful people.
I think that's a very easy answer, and here's what I'd say. the trait that they all share, all the great successful people, they share, I believe, two common traits. Number one, they are epically curious about the space that they're in. They always want to know, hey, how can I get better? They're not satisfied. They're fulfilled. Big difference. They're fulfilled in what they're doing, and I'll get to that in point number two, but they're never satisfied. They want to grow. They want to keep learning about how they can do more and contribute more, and that's huge, and that is fueled by curiosity to continually ask, how can we get better? What more can we do in the space we're in? How can we contribute more? And then secondly, I just referenced that they all are in their sweet spot. And I talk about the sweet spot when I speak around the country. I talk about it on my radio show every day. The sweet spot is true for humans, and it's true for organizations. And here's where it is, Chris. The sweet spot is at the intersection of our greatest strength and our greatest passion. The intersection of our greatest strength and our greatest passion. And the reality is, Chris, we have men and women listening to this podcast today that are really good at their job. They're knocking down nice money, but inwardly, and maybe even outwardly at this point, they do not like their job. They might even be miserable. And I would suggest that our world is full of miserable businessmen and women who are really good at their job, but they don't like it. And what's happening there? Well, what's happening is it's high on their strength line, but it's low on their passion line. And we've got to help the people in our organizations find their sweet spot, even if they got to leave. And great leaders are hiring people for the positions that they need filled that are fulfilling their sweet spot in that position. You want to have a killer company, I don't care if it's 6 people, 60 people, or 6,000 people. Listen to me. You've got to hire people that are in their sweet spot, meaning that they are in the intersection of their greatest strength and greatest passion. And so you got to really define that. You know, what I'm really, really good at, I've got to find a way to do what I love with what I'm really, really good at. And when you get to that position, it's huge. Now, let's translate that to companies. Companies, this is huge. You entrepreneurs out there that are listening in these early days when you're nimble, it's hard for big companies to grasp this truth. But the reality is their big companies are successful because at their core they've got this figured out. Sometimes big companies get out of their sweet spot. So again, as a leader, ask yourself this question. Is our company in our sweet spot? Meaning the great passion of why we exist. That's the purpose, right? You know, why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the passion statement. What's the highest passion for the company? And then what do we really do best as a company? And that's where we got to be. So this is why we exist, but this is what we do best. You've got to marry those two. And at that intersection, that's where companies really start to rock. And that's huge. But when you get outside of that sweet spot, personally and corporations, that's when you get stuck. That's when you get confused. And it's not a good place to be. It's really simple, but a lot of people miss that.
Wow. So the sweet spot. I like that. And I think as leaders, if you can look at that and begin to diagnose that and find people that are in their sweet spot, you're going to be a better company.
Oh, man, you're talking about it'll look easy to everybody on the outside. But here's what happens. Let me follow that up, Chris, because it's not just enough to find your sweet spot personally as a company. Here's the great truth on the backside of that. Number one, you got to find your sweet spot. It's huge. But number two, you got to step in it and stay there.
Mm.
You have to step in it and stay there. It's not enough to find it. You got to step in it and stay there because we have so many people walking around like zombies because they won't step in their sweet spot because they either haven't found it, which is the formula I just gave, or they see it, they know what it is, but they're scared to step into it. As you know in the book, I asked Jim Collins why most people don't pursue personal greatness. He said because they're ambiguity-averse, not risk-averse. Mm. That's a mouthful.
That is.
We're not risk-averse, Chris. We're ambiguity-averse, meaning we're so scared of the unknown we won't step into our sweet spot, and we'd rather live a life of paint by numbers, as Collins says in the book. Mm. And instead of finding a blank canvas and begin to paint until we paint our masterpiece. Strike a course that is your own and that is customized to who you are, and that's sweet spot living. Which, by the way, I want to mention real quick, Chris, if people can go to onequestionbook.com, which is the book website. Of course, the book's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere else. But I've got 3 free chapters that I'm giving away because I want people to kick the tires. I believe so much in the content. It features Lou Holtz, Marcus Buckingham, and Mark Burnett the creator of Survivor and The Voice, and those are three free chapters. I want people, they want to just go check the book out. They can kick it around as no strings attached. They don't have to give me any information. That's at onequestionbook.com.
Very good. So to recap what you were just saying about that sweet spot, you've got to find it, you've got to be willing to step in it, and then you've got to stay in it.
Yeah.
To be successful. And I think that's huge out there for our entree leaders and our business owners that are listening to this podcast to understand. Find your sweet spot, step in it, and stay in it. I think that's big.
Yeah. Well, let me add this too, Chris. This is huge. So people are always worried about right place, right time, and I hate that phrase because it's garbage. So I'd like people to never say the phrase, hey, well, he was in the right place at the right time. That's not actually correct. Here's how they should say it. He or she or this company was in the right place and the right time happened. If we don't find the right place, which is our sweet spot, Chris, then the right time will not, but more importantly, cannot happen. If you're not in the right place, the right time will not happen. It's impossible.
Wow.
And so people wonder, hey, how come I haven't found my opportunity? And I'll tell you, you're not in the right place. You get in the right place and stay there, then the right time will happen. My favorite story on that is Jeremy Lin. The basketball player for the Knicks last year. It's a great story.
It yes,
became
it
a
is.
National story. And, you know, here's what happened. Guy gets cut, Chris, twice last season by the Golden State Warriors, Houston Rockets. He's on his third team temporary contract for the New York Knicks. And two nights before he gets in his first game with the Knicks, he tells his brother in tears, I'm done. I don't think I could do this anymore. Now, this is a guy who was a great basketball player at Harvard. But because he was at Harvard and he's Asian, the experts, right, wouldn't give him a look.
That's right.
Because of stereotypes. They didn't give him a shot. And how many of us feel like we're overlooked all the time for various reasons that have nothing to do with us?
Right.
And so here he goes. He gets in the game, and the rest is history. The issue, the lesson here that I'm trying to illustrate is he didn't get good the moment he got in the game. It wasn't dumb luck. This is a good basketball player, but he stayed in his sweet spot. He stayed there. Then the opportunity came, and when it came, he was already ready.
Wow.
He was already there, and that's sweet spot living.
No, that's big. Let me ask you this. If I gave you an opportunity to send a message to all of the college graduates that are out there right now, you know, if you listen to the news, you know, you hear that, you know, the negatives get more reports than the positives. What are some tips you might give them? What are some things that Ken Coleman might give to this graduating class before they embark on their career?
Yeah, first thing I'd say is spend all your time. If you don't know what your sweet spot is, take a month, 2 months if you have to, and make sure that you're absolutely certain that you found your sweet spot, that you know what the sweet spot is. Now, there's not a bunch of specificity there.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that's where you got to be. This is your sweet spot, where you're operating here. The intersection of your great strength and great passion, that's step number one. Step number two is step in it and stay there and begin to just get there. Again, the details, the money, it'll all work out. So let's just give you a quick example. Let's say you love sports and you feel like you're a good communicator. So let's say you're passionate about sports, but you know your great strengths are communicating. Well, that could be multiple different jobs within that sweet spot, but let's say, hey, well, let's just go intern for a basketball team, whatever the sport is, right? You just go intern and get into the lowest level of the coaching type thing. So you go to player development, or you're just running around doing laundry. The current coach of the Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra, started out as the film coordinator for the Miami Heat. This guy's locked in a dungeon in Miami watching hours and hours and hours of video. But he got into his sweet spot. Is that the destination? No, but he was in his sweet spot. He stayed in it. And he keeps moving up the ranks, and boom, Pat Riley, one of the greatest coaches of all time, says, you've never heard of Eric Spoelstra, but I'm telling you, he's the guy. And now look at him. So, again, that's what I mean. So I would say step in and stay there and begin to take baby steps. And here's the big piece of advice. For college students who really get this, they're wired like you and me, Chris, and like a lot of our listeners today. They're very ambitious, and there's nothing wrong with that. But one of the great temptations for people who are ambitious is to obsess about what's next, and we miss what's in the now, and we ultimately sacrifice the next.
Mm.
And I want to say that again because that's huge.
Yes, it is.
It's a huge temptation. If we obsess about what's next, we'll miss what we need in the now and ultimately sacrifice the next. Here's what that looks like. If I'm so obsessed with what's next, I'm missing the opportunities in front of me. So that means, who do I need to learn from? Who do I need to intern for? Who do I need to serve? Who do I need to help, right? What do I need to be doing about right now and taking the opportunity in the now that will ultimately prepare me for the next. And again, there's a difference between keeping an eye on the next. I think we got to keep an eye and looking for opportunity, but we can't obsess about it. Mm. We can't blow the huge opportunity to do what we love and to make a significant difference in the now. That is so huge. So that's the advice I give to graduates, because here's what that will do. That will give you the patience you need to stay the course, because you know this, Chris, there's enormous tension in anybody who's wired to do something significant. There's tension between patience and persistence. I got to get up every day and I got to keep at it, but I also got to be patient, right? I'm hustling, but I may not see results right away. That's a huge tension. And what will keep us on the track and not frustrated and quit right before opportunity pops is this idea of the now. Truly make sure you stay in the now. Keep an eye on the next, but don't obsess about the next. So that would be the advice I would give to all graduates.
No, that's really, really good. One final question for you. Prior to you having, you know, obviously the Ken Coleman show, prior to your book, you know, One Question, Life-Changing Answers from Today's Leading Voices, let's go back in time. Let's say you're a senior in high school and you're able to go back and give yourself a couple of pieces of advice. You've lived some life. You've obviously had some tremendous successes. We've all had some scrapes and we all fall down. But what would the Ken Coleman of today go back and tell the young Ken Coleman moving forward in life?
Man, that's an awesome question. I love that. Nobody's ever asked me that. I'm so pumped. I'll try to be real brief. I would say one of the first things I'd say is learn how to channel criticism. You got to really learn how to channel it, meaning that whether it's justified or not, dig into it. Don't let it shut your spirit down. Don't let it crush your spirit. Filter it, and then apply it. If you can't apply something from it, do it. And use that as fuel to recommit yourself to what you believe you're supposed to do, and being excellent at it. That would be one piece of advice I'd say to young Ken Coleman. The second thing I would say is to do what Jim Collins tells us to do in the book. That was the answer that hit me the hardest. I've always taken some good chances, but early on in life, and I have no regrets, but I would say step into the unknown immediately. Just step into it and trust and learn from it, because, you know, I don't think you're going to do reckless, silly stuff. But I would say when you have what you think is an inkling of an opportunity, step into it. I've always had terrific confidence, but I, like everybody else, have natural insecurities, and I think we all have a fear of the unknown. So I would really say to the young Ken, take more chances to step into the unknown and just put yourself out there. Okay. And then I think the third thing I would say is, I think this comes with maturity for all of us, but personally this matters to me. I would have probably worked to be more compassionate early on. I think, you know, for me, I'm a confident, kind of a brash personality. I've got a big heart. But as a youngster, I wish that I would have worked on making sure that I gave of myself a little bit more and not just think, hey, this is all about where I end up. I think I would have savored the journey a little bit more. And so I would say to young Ken, don't be so hung up on what the next 10 years looks like. Really jump back into this idea of soaking in the moment. I was such a driven young guy. I do think I missed some opportunities to gift the gifts that God has given me and the significance that I have, and all of us have significance. I spoke to 1,000 youth leaders yesterday here in the Atlanta area, and I told them that. I said, the sweet spot living is not just about you finding your gift, it's about you also giving the gift. If I buy something for my wife, come home and stick it in the top of the closet and forget about it, it's not a gift. And I think that's what I would say, is find opportunities every day, even as a young guy, to give compassion, to help others, and not just be so hung up on your success. I think that's what I'd say.
That's excellent. Well, Ken, thank you. Thank you for joining us. For our audience out there, Ken is the talk radio host of the Ken Coleman Show. He is the author of the book One Question, Life-Changing Answers from Today's Leading Voices. Ken, thank you for taking the time to join us, and we appreciate having you here today.
Chris, I'm grateful. I had a blast.
All right. We want to thank Ken Coleman for taking the time to join us. What a great interview. I also want to welcome to the show Daniel Tardy. How
hey,
are you, my friend?
Good, good. What's up?
How are you?
I'm doing good. What a great interview.
It was. What was the one thing that really jumped out at you?
Well, I think I love Ken. I love his charisma, and I love how he's able to use a question to really evoke this huge amount of kind of the wealth of information to get these out of these guys, these answers from the people he's interviewing. And, you know, I realize for me, a lot of times as a leader, I'm tempted to just start talking and start telling rather than asking. And I think what I'm hearing from Ken is that it's so much more powerful if we start with asking. You know, our team a lot of times has the information that we need, and a lot of times they have information that we don't even have. And we assume that we come in that as the leader, that means we know everything and we have the direction and we have the vision, and we absolutely have to be visionary. But man, how powerful is it and empowering to our team when we just stop and ask? And quite often we'll end up hearing things that we otherwise never would have heard. Valuable information that gives us everything we need to know to move forward. And I think we all, you know, kind of face that battle as leaders of when to talk, when to ask.
I totally agree. And I think there's this thing of active listening that is imperative. We got to listen, and we have to listen with our body as well as with our ears. So you're giving people the focus and you're hearing what they're saying, and then you're able to ask another question for clarity if you have to.
We talk about with our sales team a lot of times, this isn't necessarily directly a leadership deal, but I remember in high school, our coach had a 5-pass offense for basketball, and you weren't allowed to shoot the ball until the ball had been passed 5 times. And that was designed, one, to keep the guy who just always wanted to take the ball and shoot, whether he actually had a good shot or not, kind of the hot dog guy. It kept him from grabbing the ball and going every time, but it also would wear out the defense because you're passing the ball, and you can pass the ball a lot faster than you can run with the ball and dribble the ball. And we talk about that in sales. A lot of times an eager salesperson will get on the phone and they'll just start talking about their product or service and just spewing all over the prospect. And so we have a 5-question minimum in sales. And it's so hard because you ask 2 questions and they say something, you go, oh, I got an answer for that. And you want to jump in and attack that thing directly. But if you'll get to that 3rd, 4th, 5th question, my gosh, so many times they'll load your gun full of ammunition, and you know exactly how to target in on the pain point or whatever it is that you'll find the real challenge that your prospect is dealing with.
So you're teaching these aggressive go-getter salespeople to have patience.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure we've taught that necessarily, but
they're learning.
But that's what we're going for. Yeah.
Learning patience.
Yeah, but asking questions. It's really the patience to ask the questions and then allow other people to talk. And I'm hearing Ken really reinforce that. And what a powerful concept. I think if we can get that more as leaders, we'll go a lot further, a lot faster.
I totally agree. So tell me, what is going on in the Entree Leadership world?
Well, the thing that we're real excited about right now, we just finished our Entree Leadership Master Series event last month. Went fantastic. It was here at our office and people were just raving. In fact, I was reading the reviews yesterday, the feedback from people that came through that event. And I was just really surprised. You know, we love our office and we think it's a great place, but I was blown away with how wowed people were just to kind of be here and see behind the scenes, see the inner workings, you know, sit down and do a coaching or mentoring session in the office of one of Dave's top leaders. And it's not like there's anything magical about us. We work hard. We're real people. We make mistakes too. But I think that for these Master Series alumni to come through and actually kind of see the place that embodies these principles. And I think they're also inspired going, these guys aren't that special. If they can do it, I can do it too. It's just a building. It's just brick and mortar like I have wherever my location is, you know, somewhere out there in the rest of the country. And so that was a fantastic event. We have our next Master Series event coming up November 3rd through the 9th. That's also going to be back here at our office. We're over halfway sold out on that event already. And so if you want to get
for a November event,
correct.
Wow.
Yeah, these are going quick. This one we did in May sold out about 3 months early, and this one's on pace to be sold out about 4 months early. So if you want to get locked in on that, you don't want to mess around, just go to entreeleadership.com. You can get more information there. But these really do sell out quick. The next event, though, that we're doing is our Performance Series event that you're teaching.
I'm excited about that.
And we love these events, and it's a lot of fun for people who want to get some of the basics of Entree Leadership. And this Performance Series event is designed for a business owner who really wants to get his team on board with Entree Leadership principles. A lot of times as leaders, we read and we go to conferences and we kind of get all the stuff and we get jacked up for ourselves and we kind of know where we want to go. But then articulating these principles and helping download these ideas to our team can be a challenge.
It really can. And so when you have your leader or your manager come here as well, they get a chance to see the Entree Leadership brand live and in color.
That's right. And we're talking to our team so much day in and day out that just having a fresh voice and a fresh perspective and somebody kind of a third-party objective teacher enforcing these principles that's not coming from the guy who signed your paycheck.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. You know, that frees up your team to go, I'm really going to soak this in. I'm really take this to heart. And so we hear stories of people that come through Entree Leadership Master Series. They bring their team through Performance Series. And it's only then that they go, oh my gosh, we get explosion in our culture. We get.
Well, they have everybody on the same page.
Everybody's on the same page.
And so they're moving in that same direction. Well, I think it's important because a lot of times people are out as leaders and business owners. You're on an island. And if you're not taking the time to pour back into yourself, you're not going to be growing. And so it's important to plug into something that can reinforce and lead you where true north is. And I think that's very, very important. So look forward to that. What else is going on?
Well, we got that. And by the way, for the month of June, if you use the promo code podcast, the Performance Series event is normally $2,500. We're going to take $500 off for podcast listeners when they register. That's just for the month of June. And tickets are going quick. And the next event is June 24th through the 27th. So they need to hurry and go ahead and get their seats locked in if they're going to do that. And they can just call us 888-227-3223 to get registered for any of our events. Of course, always follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership. And our newsletter is the best place to get everything for free. You know, all the updates about podcasts, all the content. We really try to be a generous brand and put a lot of things out there that are equipping small business owners. We consider ourselves to be the voice of hope to small business owners in the marketplace. Whether they ever come to one of our events, whether they ever give us a dollar of any kind for any transaction of a product or service that we have, we want to equip small business owners where they're at. And the newsletter is the best place to get access, not only to our stuff, but we're also highlighting things that we see taking place out. Other thought leaders in the leadership arena.
Well, we've had a few meetings, and you've got some big stuff planned for the Entree Leadership brand. And I think when you talk about having that place for leaders to be able to come to, that hub, I've seen it firsthand, and I know the things that you're planning. How do you get the newsletter? How can you connect to get that?
Right now, it's just DaveRamsey.com, and click on Entree Leadership, and there's a big button that says Get the Newsletter. So it's that simple.
Big button.
Yep.
Don't want to miss it.
That's not what our web guys call it. They make fun of me when I say the big button. But
yeah, that's why they keep you and I out of the technical areas. So with that, obviously, if you're interested in the newsletter, definitely go to DaveRamsey.com, connect and get those resources because you have to continue to grow yourself. It's imperative. I definitely want to thank Bobby Robertson, our audio engineer, Becky Powell, our producer, and of course, our guest, Ken Coleman, and of course, Dave Ramsey. So listen, stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff so you can keep learning and you can keep leading. Until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits.